Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Family Business Today, where every family business has a story to tell and a step to take to not only thrive, but working together create a lasting family legacy. I'm your host, Greg Lewis. Our guest today is Pete Walsh. Coach Pete worked in his grandfather's 89-year-old business for 16 years and as a master coach with the Family Business Performance Center in Peoria, Arizona. Peter uses his experiences to help families practice building skills in the areas of leadership, communications, and conflict resolution. Pete is the author of the Family Business Playbook, which brings timeless and practical leadership lessons to families worldwide. Well, hello, Pete.
How are you, Greg? Good to be with you today. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, thanks for joining me for this edition of Family Business Today. I've really been looking forward to our conversation to learn more about your thoughts on family members that can learn on how to coach each other to bring out their best through personal responsibility and accountability. So let's get started. You worked in your grandfather's 89-year-old business. Tell us a little about how you got involved in your family business and what your experience was like.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, probably like a lot of people, I like to say I was born into the family business. When I showed up, it was just a really big part of our family and our community. And back then, the company was just so patriarchal, so that so many of the families that were working there, they might even be in first and second generation workers. We had company parties at my grandmother and grandfather's home. So it was just such an important part of our family and our upbringing that from a very early age, I really wanted to go into the business, as probably a lot of family business members do. And then when I got out of college, I got my degree in business and I went into the family business. And by then we had a couple hundred employees. We were a Steelcase office furniture dealership. And I spent many years working my way up the ladder within that business. But, you know, it was like such a central part of my life from the very beginning, really.
Oh, yeah. Sounds very familiar to my experience and to hundreds of other family business out there who the patriarchal part and also early age experiencing the family business and everything else. So today you're a coach. How did your own experience in working in your family business prepare you to pivot to coaching?
Well, I'd like to just tell you quickly how I pivoted to coaching. I was in my mid-30s, and I'd lost a couple of brothers and a couple of best friends by the time I was in my mid-30s, and I decided life was short, and I was at church with Karen and the kids, and the sermon was about finding your special gift, and I prayed in that moment and said, help me find what mine is, because I know I can hit a home run for you. Those were my exact words. And 3 days later, a friend of mine who owned a construction company said, our coach said this. And I said, your coach, what's that? And she told me, somebody that helps us develop our plans and hold us accountable. And I said, you're kidding. Oh my gosh. I went home and told Karen, I know what I'm supposed to do. I love coaching and developing people, quite honestly. I was doing that before anybody really knew what a coach was. Yet my uncle and I didn't see eye to eye on some critical things. And I just thought, and he had said, this is going to be yours someday. And I thought, boy, I just can't see myself waiting another 20 years to have this be mine someday. And I actually left the family business and went out and started coaching. And I was coaching in corporate America and leadership development and helping leaders become better leaders and helping teams become better teams. And then somebody that worked with family businesses and estate planning came to me and said, you ought to work with family business. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. That's kind of messy. And he said, well, please come, you know, talk to a couple of our clients. And they brought me back and I just loved it. I'd been away long enough that I could bring the leadership development practices from corporate America and my experience and knowledge of family business and really make a huge difference. And so what I've said many times is I look up to the sky above and I say, my dream was to run our family business, but God's dream was for me to help impact all sorts of family businesses all over the country and really all over the world. And so it turned out to just be a beautiful blessing for me. Our family sold our family business about 10 years after I left. And it really just worked out beautifully. I'm passionate about family business. And that's part of what I try to help people say is, like, you have to find a way to either find happiness and acceptance in your family business or consider doing something else, because life is short. And I think that's an important thing to remember.
Sure, sure. Well, great, great. I was laughing when you said your uncle said that someday this will all be yours, because so many of us, that was my father's comment to me when I first joined the family business back when I was in my 20s after college. And so so many of us can relate to that. We call that the Prince Charles syndrome. Someday the throne is going to be yours. It's just you're going to have to wait until I die to get there. And so many are not willing to wait. And so anyway, thank you for sharing that. A great, great way to use your experiences from working in your family business to coach others. Well, so you've worked with a lot of family businesses. What are some of the most common obstacles family business leaders face?
You know, it's funny. And I think this is in non-family businesses as well, but it's, you know, personality differences, style differences. My uncle, I really loved him. I respected him quite a great deal, but he was just had a different view of the world. So, you know, what happens so often is one person's a big picture person. The other person's a high detail person. One is a very aggressive, expansion oriented person. The other one's very conservative and, you know, risk averse. So I think those are the things that trip up families a lot, is they have different styles. And you and I both know this, and we talk to people a lot about it, about getting them aligned with a similar vision and similar values. And so I think, you know, one of the biggest hurdles is just kind of misaligned expectations and values, and maybe not learning or knowing how to manage those differences. Right? Learning how, that's what my work is really all about, teaching people how to communicate, how to understand, interact with each other, collaborate. I think you and I have this in common as well, but I've been married 36 years, and that's been an ongoing collaboration, discussion, compromise, learning to meet each other halfway. So I think there's all those differences, yet people don't know how to navigate them. They get kind of fixed in their way. They get frustrated. They get resentful. So I really teach people how to learn to communicate with each other and kind of meet each other in the middle and see if we can find some good common ground. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. It does make sense. I was thinking as you were talking about that is that I really find founders of companies is, and especially those that are you're in my dad's age, grandfather's ages, was that they really created the company for it to be a job, a job. So they ran it based on that vision of creating a paycheck every week to take home to their spouses to buy groceries and clothes and take care of the children, the home, and everything else. And but then as you go into second, third generations, there's this beginning to build this wealth and begins to take a look at how do we run the business as a business rather than as a job.
Yeah, it's what I call professionalizing the firm. And now, and that's an interesting thing that you said. So when Grandpa started his business, there was just a few people there. And by the way, I still have his letters that he writes to his brothers in the 1920s, because we were a typewriter business was how we started, which is really okay. Great. But by the time you get to a couple hundred employees, well, now you've got managers and you've got different expectations and it's got to be run differently. And then if we fast forward 20 or 30 years from where I started, the world is so different now in terms of employees' expectations and people's expectations and the diversity in the workforce. So back in the day when I was running that company, these people trusted us. They didn't have all these devices in their hands with 100 different people talking at them all day. We kind of had their attention and we got to talk to them and build a trusting relationship. But today, leadership is trickier than ever. So it's more important than ever that the family business has a unified leadership team and a unified leadership approach, because it's really what's needed to have a engaged and accountable workforce.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good. Yeah, I was thinking when you said that one of the biggest things has been technology, and I can remember some of the biggest arguments that my father and I had in the business was me purchasing a fax machine and and buying a computer system for our offices. And
yeah.
And his thought was, we've never had those. These will never work. So yes, I agree with you there. So there is those gaps that have to be filled. Well, you and your grandfather wrote a book. It's called The Family Business Playbook in 2021. What's the backstory for writing the book?
Well, you know, I've been working with families for 20 years. I'm 62 years old, and I'm really clear that I want to be able to have an impact even after I'm gone. So that's the important part about writing the book. And it's very practical. It's got a lot of exercises that I've developed with people over the years. I never actually got to work with my grandfather in the business. He passed away when I was 9 years old, and I had a whole bunch of his written memos to employees about how to work hard, treat this place as if it was your own, make a list, do the right thing. So he was kind of into all this personal improvement like I was. So I had this vision. I said, wow, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write my book, but I'm going to take his original writings and I'm going to incorporate them in the book. And this was a way for me to achieve one of my dreams, which was I wish I'd gotten to work with my grandfather. And so then when I got the first copy of the book published, I wrote inside the front cover, congratulations, grandfather, you are now a published author 50 years after your passing, which I thought was really, really cool. And quite honestly, Greg, what's so funny is I asked Karen, I said, read this list he put together. He put together the 7 essentials for success, and they're still relevant today. Make a list, be organized, read a book, be a good person, go the extra mile. So that was the backstory of the book. And so I'm just super excited and proud of it. And I know it's something that will be around. He and I will be around helping family businesses when we're both long gone. And I think that's a really neat thing. And I encourage a lot of people, write a book, write a few things down. As I said, I've got my grandfather's writings from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. And it's so great to be able to kind of spend time with him and understand what he was going through in life. And so, yeah, the book's just a really practical kind of a workbook. It's a bit of a do-it-yourself way for families to get better at what they do.
Right. Well, thanks for sharing that. Great memories of your grandfather and the vision. The legacy lives on through the next generations and family businesses. Well, there was one part of the book as I was reading it that I thought was something that some of our next generation family business leaders who are not yet in the family business might be interested in. And that says that if they're considering joining the family business, either a why. And I agree with you that a lot of times it's either out of obligation or a lack of direction. How should they go about answering the question, is the family business the right place for me?
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here because I like to do that. I want to tell them, go out and work someplace else before you even make that decision, because there's something, and when we do family meetings, and I'd like to talk before we're done about the Family Business Manifesto, which is a tool that I help people create, but there's something called pre-employment policy, which is you go work someplace else for 2 years, 4 years, get a promotion, you know, advance in that company, and then come back and work in the family business, because a couple things will happen. Is one is you'll have a better sense of who you are outside of our family business, and we will get the benefit of your learning and your experience and the things you gained while you were outside the family business. So I think, you know, Greg, there's one guy I'm thinking of, and he's in North Carolina, and he was in his mid-40s, and he looked at me and he said, I've just always kind of thought, what if? What would have happened? What could I have done if I'd worked somewhere else? And I think it's such an important thing for your identity, as it was for me. I had worked outside our family business many times before I came in. Now, not really in a professional career setting. And so that would have been even better. But I think one of the things is to go out and get experience elsewhere, because you can always come back into the family business. Now, the founders and family owners sometimes tell me, you know, oh, I can train them the best. I want to train them the right way from the very beginning. But I think good family business leaders understand that it's important for people to go out and get their own identity, get their confidence, learn how to advance in their careers, even without the family business. So what do you think of that idea?
Well, my first thought, TDS, is if I'm going to make mistakes, I want to make it on somebody else's dime and not my family.
Yeah, exactly.
but seriously, you can also learn so much from others. And that's what mentors, coaches, working for somewhere else is you're looking to get unbiased opinions on decision making that you're doing, and get encouraged for it, and be corrected for it, and everything else. Well, you mentioned the Family Business Manifesto. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, there's something I think about, and I talked earlier about my marriage, and there's a guy that I listened to, and he said, you know, that's why they make you stand up and promise in front of everybody, all your friends and relatives. That's what a marriage is about. You say, I do, for the rest of my life, and they make you make the promise in front of everybody. The Family Business Manifesto is something I work on with the family, where it says, here's how we're going to treat each other. Here's how we're going to handle conflict. Here's what we want this business to be. Here's what we're going to do if we become, you know, as I said, conflicted with each other. So it's a bit of like a declaration of independence, if you will. It's a document that I want to be a sacred document for the family, kind of like your marriage license. And everybody signs it, because then that gives you something to go back to and say, hey, we all agreed when we were in good spirits and working on our family vision and goals that we would do these three things here. So can we get back to that? So it's really a bit of like a contract, an agreement that we make with each other. Because, you know, when you're getting married, now for me, I was super nervous that day. My knees were knocking, but you're usually pretty excited and optimistic about the future. And then when you get into life, curveballs happen and things happen, and then you have to kind of think, how am I going to get through this, and am I really committed to this? So the Family Business Manifesto is a bit of a living document, and I encourage families, we update it, and you change it as the next generation comes along, but it's a bit of a shared agreement that we have with each other. So we are going to have disagreements. We're going to have conflict, but our shared promises to each other act as kind of a guidepost, our North Star, if you will, to help us settle our disagreements. Does that make sense?
Sure does. Sure does. Well, I was thinking about the comparison to marriage. Unfortunately, though, about 50% of those marriages where they make those vows are irreconcilable, that end in divorce. Are there any family business situations that are irreconcilable?
For sure. And I think that's the other thing people need to deal with. And by the way, that's part of what's in the manifesto, which says, here's how I want you and I to work together. And if at some point we, after a lot of good hard work and discussion, decide we aren't right for each other, let's peacefully find a way to split the sheets. Let's peacefully find a way to go forward with each other. So yes, I think that definitely there are irreconcilable differences at times. Yet, you know, the thing is, and you've probably seen this, I've seen some families, you know, spend $1 million with the attorneys getting in a fight. And I've seen family businesses that were meant to be a source of family pride and security become, you know, a total source of family meltdown and estrangement. So part of the skills I'm trying to teach people, part of the framework, is to give you the tools so when this thing breaks down a bit, we have the wherewithal, the resilience, the mindset, the warm heart to handle our disagreements. And I think that's the thing. I think people are impatient. I think they lack resilience at times. I'm not sure about your marriage. I know in my marriage, we've had challenging moments. And when we work through that in a warm heart and with a good spirit with each other, we come out the other side stronger and better. And so that's the other thing I want people to see, is that these challenges, these breakdowns, are an opportunity for you to strengthen as a family. But so often people want to run. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work. It's painful. I mean, it's difficult to roll up your sleeves and have some of those difficult conversations. Yet when you can do it, you can really grow as a family and as human beings. And, you know, a lot of us have kids and extended families. And so what happens in the family business can set a tone for what happens in the larger community. So if we get angry at each other and storm out, that's going to cause big fractures in the family. So I think the family business is a bit of a perfect confluence, if you will, of family values and life and problem solving. And so if it goes well, it can be a really beautiful, great place to deal with that. And if it goes south, it can also be a place that can cause generational estrangement. So I think people need to work hard before they decide if it's irreconcilable.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. If I break that down a little bit, I believe what you're saying is that that most issues in a family business are either irreconcilable or reconcilable are caused by families just not communicating with each other.
And giving each other a little bit of grace and a little bit of room. And, you know, ironically, if my uncle and I had met each other in the middle a little bit more, it would have been great, because he was a bit conservative and, you know, watchful. And I was a bit of a big vision guy that wanted to grow and do some other things. And so, you know, a lot of times if you can come together in the middle, that's, and you know, we know that, and I overuse the sports analogy. The backdrop of my book is all about practicing as a team, and really great teams are made up of a diverse set of skills and talents and mindsets. So if you can bring all of that together in a productive way, you have a stronger team. I mean, you don't have a great team if everybody's identical with each other. You have a great team when you have a wide range of personalities and talents.
So, continuing on with that, so how can a family maintain better boundaries between business issues and family issues with better communications.
I like to tell the story all the time when I went to the family holiday meal, and you know, I always left my differences at the door and gave Uncle Tim a big hug, and we had a great time at the family gathering, even though my wife and kids would know, they'd hear me during the week say, oh my gosh, I can't believe he made me do this, or he didn't like the idea of getting that new warehouse out in that other part of town. I think it's an important part of professionalism, quite honestly, and it's something I work with people a lot. It's discipline, it's mental discipline and practice. And, you know, boy, how many holiday dinners are ruined because of the tension of the family business. So I feel very strongly about that. It's like, be a professional, leave your, you know, I put my cleats on and my helmet and I walk on the field down there at the family business. But when I walk into the holiday dinner, leave all that stuff at the door. So I really think it's about practice. It's about discipline. It's about, again, a commitment to family harmony. And you know this so well, I know you do, that sometimes the family business it's got such a center stage in the whole family. Like, we can't even get together at Thanksgiving without saying, hey, what happened last week down at the shop? Or did you hear Joe quit and all of that? And so, you know, a good family leader learns to set the boundaries that we discuss and deal with our family business conflict at the family, and we leave it there when we come together as a family. And it takes a lot of discipline and practice, but it can be done. It really can. But people are stubborn, and they're I don't know, their ego gets in the way. And then there's this whole thing of like emotional blackmail or the kids. I mean, you're not even going to see the grandkids. We're not bringing the grandkids over to Christmas. Why not? Well, I'm still angry at the fact that you didn't give me the raise or whatever it is. I mean, it's just terrible. It's like, don't allow your family business to become weaponized to cause family conflict. You've got to leave it at the door.
Yeah. We always talk about the dinner table and what to talk about, what not to talk about. Well, yeah. Your clients call you Coach Pete. So for those who may be a little confused about it, how is coaching different from counseling or consulting?
I'm so glad we got to discuss that, because it is confusing. Coaching is about performance improvement right here and now in the future. What are you going to do? What are you going to do between now and when we get together again? This idea of reflective practitioner. And a reflective practitioner, we review the game film. So again, sports analogy, we're on a team. When we get out there in the game, you're going to go left 10 yards, I'm going to go right 10 yards. And the coach's job is to help people stop and learn how to practice, learn how to give each other feedback. Counseling is more about, oh gosh, what happened when you were 6 years old and your dad said that to you? Counseling tends to be more focused in the rearview mirror and discussing kind of maybe some of the sources of conflict at the very beginning. And consulting, as you know, is more prescriptive. Consulting is more, hey, you need to take these three steps, or you need to do this to increase your sales. Coaching is really helping the client access their own knowledge. And so the coach isn't as much the expert, but teaching them how to get the most out of their own thinking and be honest with each other and have good dialogue. But it really does get confusing, Greg, with people a lot. And people will joke with me and say, yo, you're the therapist. And I say, no, you can't call me that. I'm not a therapist. Coaching is really about helping people practice and get better at what they do. And most families really appreciate that. They appreciate having that tool. And most of us, again, I'm smiling and laughing, my wife and I hired a therapist recently to help us work through a couple of issues with one of our adult children. And there's a place for all of it. But for many people, they get confused about the difference. So a coach is skill building. Therapy is more about dealing with long-term, perhaps past issues. And consulting is more prescriptive. Mm-hmm. We used to have a consultant in our business, and they, you know, they might give you a big binder of things to do and then they go away. But your coach will stay with you for a while and mm-hmm. kind of watch you perform and help you get better.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I'm thinking about your family business that you were in. You had your grandfather who has founded it, your uncle, second generation, then you, third generation. So how has leadership changed in the 40 plus years you've been studying leadership?
Boy, you know, that's a whole nother 2-hour conversation, and I'm kind of smiling and joking.
A couple thoughts.
I still have one foot in non-family business because I think it's an important thing for me to be able to kind of have a sense of how great businesses work that are either family businesses or non-family businesses. But leadership, again, when I started, my grandfather back in the 1950s and 60s, I think there was a lot more trust. There was more loyalty. There was more paternal kind of leadership. Today, as you know, there's a lot of transparency. There's a lot of social media talking about companies and companies' experiences. So today, you've got to be a really effective leader. You got to learn how to be agile. You got to learn how to connect with people. That's the other thing. I call it being a coaching leader. The first book I wrote was called Coach to Win the Leadership Game. A coach knows how every player's a little bit different. This player really does well if I give him a pat on the back. This player over there, she does a little bit better if I give her a little bit of more direct feedback. And so as a leader, you've got to be able to switch gears a lot. You got to be able to meet people where they're at. And so it's become a lot more complex, a lot more dynamic. And you know, because I hear this from people a lot, that's the other thing. This person came, they're working for my company for 3 years. They're really starting to understand who we are. And then they come in and tell me, hey, I'm going to go take a year and travel and backpack around Europe. And the leader almost falls off their chair. So for you to build a loyal, committed workforce, you really have to work on your leadership. And people, they don't stay around as much. So I think it's a lot harder than it was many, many years ago. Mm. And it means that you have to really up your game, and you really have to be good at reading people and helping bring out the best in them.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you, Pete. We could talk on for hours and hours. I love talking about this subject and hearing other people's thoughts on, and you brought some really valuable points to our listeners today. Let's transition to transitioning a family business for just a second. The Small Business Administration says that any time 40% of business owners are considering transitioning in the next 5 years, and the primary reason for failure is a lack of planning. What trends might be helping or hurting family business owners in successfully transitioning their business to the next generation in the future?
It's such a great question, and it's such an important question. And you know this. It's like most of these founders and family business people think, man, this business is awesome. It's great. And somebody's going to come in and write me a big check. And it usually doesn't happen that way. Buyers are a lot more sophisticated. They want to understand your business. They want to understand the long-term risks. Your team, that's the other thing I say to people, that your team is one of the most important things. I mean, you've got a great product. You're in a good market. Yet, will this team be able to carry on without you? So it really is about building a good team. It's about building an organization where somebody can come in from the outside and look at it up one side and down the other and see very clearly what you do and how you do it, because buyers are more sophisticated. They're not simply going to come in and take your word for the fact that, hey, this has been a great business. We've been doing this for 30 years and it's going to keep going for another 30 years. So you have to really, again, polish it up. One of my clients who sold his business a few years ago, he's so smart, and he said, think of selling your house. You got to start a few years ahead of time, and you want to get it painted. You want to fix it up from the very front to back, top to bottom. That's how you're going to get the most value out of it. So I think people are over reliant on the fact that somebody's going to come in and just love your baby and write you a big check for it. You have to take an objective view. And, you know, that's something about coaching. That's something about the work that you and I do. Sometimes it's helpful to get an objective set of eyes. There's a whole industry that works with that to come in and say, I'm just going to look at this from a buyer's perspective before you ever put the for sale sign up. And now here's a few things you ought to clean up before you even put the for sale sign. So I think people are a lot more sophisticated, and you've got to really start much earlier. And that's one other quick point I'd like to make is I had a client who said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And now we've got this president running the firm. And, you know, a year later, the president blew up. The president didn't work out. So start earlier than you think you need to, and give yourself a little bit of room for a couple of hiccups. And you don't always get to pick your spot. So you really need to be thinking ahead of time and being proactive in doing that. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, we try, we always suggest that you take 2 to 3 years from this standpoint of education, planning, and implementation before you have successful transition of your business, because there's so much that can go wrong economy wise or business wise, competition wise, validating the next generation of leadership or non-family members leadership. So yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, and that's the biggest transaction of your life. So for a lot of these families, right? I mean, that is a really, really big deal. So you want to get it right. You want to be thoughtful. You want to educate yourself. You want to put a good team of professionals around you to make the most out of that opportunity.
Well, that's true. Well, Pete, thank you for being my guest on Family Business Today. Please accept our best wishes for continued success as you help family business owners get what they want from their business, build lasting legacies, and have strong families.
Well, I know you're doing such important work, Greg. It's really an honor to be here, and I know you and I share a passion for this work, and so it's just been great to be here, and I hope folks will take a chance to check out some of our free tools. I got a lot of really great free tools that they can work with. And it's been great to be here with you. I've thoroughly enjoyed the dialogue.
Well, thank you. We enjoyed it as well. So to purchase a copy of Coach Pete's book, The Family Business Playbook, and to learn more about Pete Walsh and the Family Business Performance Center, visit his website at www.familybusinessperformance.com. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for the Family Business Today podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Center for Family Business, located in Nashville, Tennessee. Our passion is to help families create a positive environment where the family thrives, the business performs, and working together to create a lasting family legacy. Whether you're a business owner looking to grow your family business, or you're wanting to prepare to someday sell or transition the business to the next generation, check out our free resources on our website at www.pncfb.com. If you want to talk to a family business advisor about your specific family business needs, schedule a 30-minute no-cost call by sending us an email to info@pncfb.com. Meanwhile, if you want to talk, we will listen. So until next time, thanks for joining us.